welcome to this Thursday edition, this Giving Hearts Day edition of Main Street here on Prairie Public. I'm Craig Blumenschein. We hope you can join us today on Giving Hearts Day and power the tower. That's your donation that ensures Prairie Public continues to provide trusted news, arts, and educational programming across our region. Plus, every gift is matched dollar for dollar, doubling your impact. You can visit prairiepublic.org all day long and give today. Coming up on Main Street, Matt Olean, our resident movie guru, he'll review the movie I'm Still Here. It's in Spanish and subtitled, but it's a movie Matt really likes. And Dave Thompson, our veteran news director, and I will review this week's news, and there's been a lot of it from the North Dakota legislature. And we begin Main Street today with Dr. Jeremy Straub. He's from North Dakota State University in the Department of Computer Science. Dr. Straub, thanks for joining us on Main Street.
Yeah, Craig, thanks for having me.
We are here to visit about the Fargo AI Connect event, which will be held Wednesday, February 19th. And we're going to dial into what that event's all about. Dr. Straub, tell me, what inspired the creation of the Fargo AI Connect event, and what are its main objectives?
Well, the goal of the event really is to try to bring people together in the AI community in the Fargo area. And this includes people that are currently using AI in their business or, for kind of advanced personal use, people that maybe have an interest in using AI in their business, as well as people that are researching it or doing education related to AI at NDSU and other schools in the area. So really, it's to try to get everybody that kind of has an interest in this area talking and to really see where it goes and to see what synergies we can discover and how we can advance the technology and advance our region's involvement with it through getting everybody together and facilitating communication.
And when you talk about landscape, holy smokes, the landscape has changed so much just in recent maybe microseconds or minutes, or certainly within recent weeks and years. How does this event fit into that evolution of AI here in Fargo?
Well, I think there is a lot changing. And, if we were having this discussion, two or three years ago, we probably would be talking about there just being a few people doing some research on it, mostly in the university environment. I'm sure there were some businesses, particularly some of our larger companies that have a tech interest that were maybe looking at it as a, kind of down the road thing. And now, it's something that we're all familiar with. I think everybody has heard about, a number of different AI products. I think the average kind of person on the street now knows a lot more about AI than they did, months or years ago. And I think it's creating a lot of interest, which is a really good thing because it's a technology, group that really can do a lot to help people. And the more that we can do to help people understand, what exactly AI is good for, where maybe it still needs some improvement, where it can have, immediate benefit, and where there's a need for research or other, other innovation to occur. These are all really important things. And, again, to kind of tie this into our region, the question I think becomes, well, what does our region need in terms of AI products and services that are specific, that are different than maybe other regions due to, particular industries that we have here or other factors, and trying to identify those things and, again, make sure that the people that are developing the technologies in the region realize what the people that might be interested in buying the technologies or licensing the technologies or, again, working with them are interested in. So again, that's kind of the goal of our AI Connect event, is really to just get everybody talking and to try to, again, help everybody understand where, everybody else in the room is at, so to speak, in terms of, their development, their needs, their wants, and so forth.
Straub, what kind of attendees are you anticipating? Are they going to be mostly AI professionals, students, business leaders, all of the above?
I think it really is all of the above. We certainly are hoping for a lot of turnout from campus, faculty, staff, and students. We're hoping for a lot of turnout from the community, from local business leaders, people that might be working on developing and implementing AI technologies, and, advanced personal users that, are working with AI. Maybe they've, they're using, some sort of AI product, and they're, maybe thinking that they would like to get more involved. Maybe they have an interest in, doing a startup. Maybe they have an interest and the means to make an investment in some sort of an entity. Again, all of these groups are groups that, or people are from groups that really could have a synergistic, outcome if they're able to interact. And so again, that's kind of where we're going, is to try to just get as many people talking about this kind of good stuff as we can. And, you know, hopefully there's some really beneficial outcomes from that discussion.
We'll talk more about the speakers and panels in just a second, but how can one attend? Is there a cost? Is it free? Does one need to register? Give us the nuts and bolts.
Absolutely. So it is free to attend in person. It starts off at Emerging Prairie with a startup brew, what they call a startup brew takeover in the morning. And then we move to Berry Hall at about 10 a.m. Again, both events are free to attend. You can attend one, you can attend both, you can attend, you know, parts of the day as it makes sense. There is no pre-registration required for in-person attendance. We also will have portions of the day available via Zoom. And for that, you will need to go on and just put in your name and your email address just so it can send you the link out so that you have a way to get into it. And that's free as well. There's no cost for that either.
Website, can they find that link, Dr. Straub?
So this is a little bit of a long one. It's ndsu.edu/conferences/AI Connect, and I should note that that's conferences with an S, not singular conference, but conferences. So ndsu.edu/conferences/AI Connect, no spaces or anything in between AI and Connect.
There'll be a variety, I guess, of panels, tech spotlights, speakers. What are you most anticipating? What are you most excited about and why?
Well, I'm excited about the whole thing, so that's a very difficult question. But, you know, we have a lot of great speakers. We have two individuals that are kind of our lead speakers. They'll be starting at the Startup Brew Takeover. That's Felicity Moorman, who's the co-founder and CEO of Boss.Tech. And Josh Reedy, who is the founder and CEO of Thread. Josh is from the region here. You know, of course, he's up in Grand Forks most of his time. Thread has offices in Fargo, and Felicity is coming from outside the region and will be joining us here for the day. So certainly, those will be some exciting presentations at Startup Brew, and then we have a panel with those individuals. But again, there's so much great stuff.
Panel AI applications panel. You're moderating that panel along with Felicity and Josh and Zach Johnson, who's a grad student at NDSU. As the moderator, what's your goal for that panel? What do you want people to come away with?
Well, I think, you know, a big part of that is going to be kind of building on what both Josh and Felicity talk about in the morning at Startup Brew. You know, Startup Brew always is kind of talking about a little bit about the company, a little bit about what they do, and a little bit about the story of the individual who's the one that's presenting. And so I think, you know, in both cases, you have a really kind of interesting story of, you know, individuals that have been involved in a number of different things and have kind of come to something that's successful and that's a really good kind of, you know, pathway that at least could be kind of exemplary for other people to follow in the future. So I think we'll hear a lot about that. I think we'll hear probably some technical questions. I think we'll hear some people that want to know a little bit more about kind of their take on some of the technologies. And a lot of it, too, will be kind of seeing what the audience wants and what questions the audience has. I mean, as a moderator, often my goal is to try to ask as few questions as I can. And, you know, the more that we can get from the audience, the better, right? Because that means we're answering the questions that the people who are actually there listening want answers to.
Look at the AI environment, if you will, of the Fargo/North Dakota region. Can we compete in AI here with startups like you've talked about, with students who are coming out of school, with all of the research work that's happening here? What makes this region attractive to AI now and in the future, I guess?
Well, I think everywhere is going to be doing some level of AI. And, you know, a lot of times, you know, obviously there are going to be some regions that due to existing, you know, large companies that are trying to get into the space and that are investing a lot, become, you know, kind of initial early winners just because there's a really easy pathway for them to get into a new space compared to other regions that may not have that much existing infrastructure or talent or an existing, you know, entity there. But I think when you're thinking about AI in the long term, you know, AI is going to be everywhere. It's going to be affecting a ton of different industries. And, you know, for regions, you know, that are not, you know, kind of the Silicon Valleys or kind of, you know, the key tech quarters, you know, a lot of that can be playing to the region's strengths. So, you know, for example, we have a lot of great technology development that goes on for agriculture in this region. We have, you know, several John Deere facilities that are all devoted technology development, a Bobcat facility, and a number of other examples. These are, literally, world-leading companies in their areas that are doing their tech dev in Fargo. And so that's a strength that we can draw upon. But I think the other thing that's really neat, and I come back to this really great quote from Bill Gates about how, when he was starting Microsoft, his concern was that, two kids in a garage somewhere, could put them out of business if they had the next great idea. And I think when you're thinking about AI, particularly with all the, capabilities to host stuff online, and where you don't really need to be by the physical infrastructure anymore, it really, it could be two kids in a garage in Fargo or two kids in a garage in Bismarck or any, even a small, tiny little city, out in North Dakota that has a, much smaller population than either of the two cities that I just mentioned, that have a great idea, that have a great application, that see a need that nobody else does. And they make the really cool thing and become the next great success story in the space because it really fits a need that a lot of people have.
We're enjoying our conversation with Dr. Jeremy Straub from the Department of Computer Science at North Dakota State University. He's helping organize Fargo AI Connect, which is an event that will be held next Wednesday, February 19th. It's free to attend, and there's more to be learned at the North Dakota State University website. We'll give that link here again in just a minute. One of the things that I thought about AI relative to how businesses are starting to use it within what it is that they do day in and day out is larger businesses. You mentioned John Deere earlier, seems to me have an advantage. But maybe events like this can help the smaller guy begin to learn what's available for them. Is that right?
A lot of it, kind of comes down to, where the business is already in terms of their technology posture. Companies that were already strong users of technology that already have a lot of their, records digitized, that have their business processes digitized, makes it a lot easier to add a tool, like an AI system to it because you already have so much of the information right there. So, certainly I think there's a lot more impetus to, to have electronic records and to, have a little bit more order to stuff at a big company than you would maybe sometimes need at a small company where, you could have maybe one person that just kind of knows where everything is and, the records that need to be online are online and the other ones are in a filing cabinet. So in that regard, yeah, I would say, big companies may have a little bit of a an advantage. But, the flip side is, a small company, particularly a young company, potentially has the ability to kind of start business processes from scratch. And, by virtue of doing that, they don't necessarily have to deal with a lot of, legacy systems or legacy processes. So there, there's pluses and minuses. Certainly having lots of data to feed into a system like this can be a really big benefit for companies that have been around for a while because they're able to, make their own large language model or similar based upon their own knowledge as opposed to having to find knowledge from somewhere else or collect it or develop it the way a much younger company or a brand new startup company might have to do a similar thing.
Dr. Straub, I assume you would tell me that AI education is growing at NDSU. What does that mean and what has changed between last year and this year, between this year and 3 years ago, relative to the students that you teach in the Department of Computer Science relative to AI?
Well, I think there's a ton of interest, and I think that's the biggest thing is I think, there were, a few years ago, certainly computer science students had some knowledge of it. We've offered AI courses for quite some time. Exactly what's included in an AI course in 2025 versus what was included, say, in 2020 or in, even before that is a little bit different. But, AI as a collection of technologies has been around, over 50 years now. So it's not like, from the perspective of, from a research university, this is like a light switch that's just getting flipped on. It's been there. We've been talking about it. But now I think you have students that are seeing, the potential coming in because they're hearing about it from, from everywhere. They're hearing about it on the news. They're hearing about it on social media. They're hearing about it from their friends. And so you have a lot of students that are saying, hey, I know I'm going to need to work with this stuff. I know my ability to succeed in my career is going to be driven by, how well I understand and can work with and can master, develop, et cetera, these AI systems. And so there's a lot of interest in, in the part of students and actually learning about AI. And, you know, just a lot of kind of neat stuff that kind of comes from that. Students doing their own projects or you know, trying to, you know, do AI integrated projects for class projects, even in classes that might not have, you know, necessarily an AI focus to them, where a student's saying, hey, can I, you know, can I incorporate a large language model in this, or can I incorporate a AI technique in this assignment so that I'm getting some experience and I'm getting something to put in my portfolio that has AI in it, even though I'm doing, you know, something that may be completely different. So yeah, it's a very, you know, very neat environment, but also a very, you know, very different environment than was even just a few years ago.
You're making me remember my instruction of Lisp programming. That's L-I-S-P. And it was a language that was used in the very, very early days of AI. I think that's when the concept of recursive coding was introduced to me, if I recall. But boy, was that a long time ago. And I'm sure things have really changed today. What surprises students most when they come to you and say, hey, I want to be an AI programmer, or I want to understand AI, and you tell them what that is all about? What surprises them the most?
Well, I think for a lot of students, it's understanding what that means. And, you know, it used to be that we would have people that would come in and they would say, oh, I really want to, you know, I want to be in video games. And, the next question you kind of have to ask is, okay, well, what do you want to do? Because for some people, it might be doing like the artwork or doing, you know, the 3D modeling or something else. For other people, it might be doing game design. And for other people, it might actually be doing the programming. And, you know, depending on which one of those things that you wanted to do, you had a very different curriculum that you would try to pursue to prepare for that. And so, you know, we see a very similar thing, I think, now with AI, where, you know, you have people that say, hey, I want to do AI. And then it becomes kind of the question of, well, what do you want to do with it? Do you want to be the person that's developing new AI techniques? Do you want to be the individual that is trying to figure out how to apply, you know, existing AI technologies to a business problem? Do you want to be the person that's trying to figure out how to bring knowledge in to these systems and structure it in a certain way? Again, each of those is a different skill set. And, you know, it's not to say that there isn't some overlap. Certainly everybody needs to know a little bit about what everybody else does. But, you know, there's growing specialty in those areas that, you know, again, it's a somewhat a different track for each in terms of kind of what skills you need to learn to really be prepared to excel in that particular area.
My guest is Dr. Jeremy Straub. We're talking about the NDSU AI Connect Conference, which is next Wednesday. You can learn more at ndsu.edu/conferences/AI Connect. It's a conference that will be held on February 19th, starting next Wednesday. There's some networking, some rapid networking sessions, you call them. What should people anticipate in those sessions?
Well, you know, one of the things that I always kind of find frustrating at certain events is you're hearing about all this neat stuff. You're seeing, oh, I want to go talk to that person. I want to talk to that person. And then the event has so much packed into it that you just don't have a time to do that. And so we've built four blocks of time specifically into the event where there's nothing else going on for people to talk. And the idea is that we're going to be trying to get people moving around the room and talking to different people during the time so that you also don't have to kind of, you know, wander up to somebody and figure out how to break the ice. You know, we're going to kind of do that for you. So again, you know, these are each of these sessions are about 15 minutes, so they're not super long. You know, you'll be at a table with a few other people, and the idea is hopefully by the end of that, everybody kind of knows who else was at the table, what they do. And, you know, you have a few people where you say, wow, this is a good contact. I'm so glad I met this person, because now, you know, I know somebody that does this, or I know who to call if I need to know about that. So again, it's really, again, just to get people talking in a different way. You know, we have the presenters and the panels to try to convey information in one way, and then also the networking sessions. Both in terms of, you know, we have a networking period over lunch that's unstructured, and we have, if people want to stay after the event, we've put in some networking time at the end that's also unstructured. But then those structured networking periods are designed to kind of help people that, you know, that might work better for them, and that's a way to help them, you know, get to know some of the other people in the room and learn about what they do and how they might be able to work with those individuals.
You host this event 5 years from now, so 2030, you say, Craig, let's talk about the AI Connect event again on Main Street. How's it going to be different, do you think? Do you spend time thinking about the emergence of AI now that it's so ingrained in almost everything that we do, whether we realize it or not, Dr. Straub?
Well, I think it is going to be tremendously different. And, you know, I, you know, not getting so much into, you know, what might the event be you know, initially, you know, right off the bat. I mean, I think the first thing you have to kind of think about with a question like that is, well, where would we be with AI in 5 years? Because we've come an awful lot long, you know, distance in the past 5 years. You know, back in 2020, you know, we weren't all talking about large language models. We, you know, OpenAI and other names were not kind of part of our national vocabulary the way they are now. And so I think, you know, 5 years from now, probably everybody will be using multiple AI systems every day. Hopefully those systems will be, you know, be very high quality, where a lot of the, you know, kind of initial bugs and, you know, getting up to speed and learning what problems can happen with an AI system and how to get, you know, get around them, get beyond them, you know, prevent them from happening again, will be kind of largely worked out. But I mean, you know, one of the cool things about AI is that once you get the technology going, once you get it, you know, get it implemented in an area and you can kind of turn it loose and say, hey, help me improve my business processes or help figure out a solution to this or help, you know, discover new medicines, you know, using these algorithms, you really can get, you know, just incredible returns. You can have the computer, you know, doing this 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, you know, 365 days a year, and doing it potentially at a much faster rate than a human can. So, you know, again, where could we be in 5 years with that type of technical capability? You know, could we have faster computer processors that make the AI run even faster that have been designed by an AI? There's a lot of people that are working on that. Could we have a lot of great new medicines that are, you know, changing lives, saving lives, you know, helping improve everybody's daily life? I mean, hopefully that would certainly be a great outcome. And I think if we were to have, you know, to do the same event and, you know, to try to get people talking, I mean, it probably would be a much bigger group than it will be this year, because, you know, there may be nobody that wouldn't be part of our audience at that point, because everybody's so, you know, so using using AI so integrally that, you know, again, everybody would kind of fall within the description of how I've defined, you know, who should come to the event for this year. But I think, you know, some of the fundamentals would still be there, you know, trying to get people looking for synergies, looking for ways to connect, looking for ways to use the technology in new areas. But, you know, exactly what those new areas would be is so hard to determine, because, you know, it's really even difficult to imagine where, you know, 2 years from now we might be, particularly if the technologies get up to speed where, you know, again, they're just kind of, you know, kind of building upon themselves, you know, with humans helping them and overseeing them. But, you know, in some cases, just kind of getting out of the way and saying, wow, this is a really great outcome. You know, let's flip the switch on and see what kind of great stuff comes out if we just let it run.
We've been talking about Fargo AI Connect. The goal of the event, which happens next Wednesday, February 19th, is to connect local businesses, faculty, students, and others in the artificial intelligence or AI space. The event will facilitate the development of connections that could lead to new collaborations for research and business, internship opportunities, and more. This includes those who are currently using AI and those who are interested maybe in using it in the future. Jeremy, anything else you would like to say as an invitation for folks to come?
Well, again, you know, anybody that's listening to this program that has an interest in this, you know, encourage them to check out the website, encourage them to come out to the event. You know, again, we have a ton of great speakers. We've already spoken about a few of them. Those were mostly speakers in the morning. In the afternoon, we get into a few tech spotlights. We'll have Scott Meyer from Chip AI there talking about what his company does. We'll have Atif Mohammed from Healable Incorporated talking a little bit about what he does. We have an AI technologies panel in the afternoon as well. So there's a lot of neat stuff, you know, kind of a whole day of it. Again, a lot of great networking opportunities. Should be a really great opportunity for people to learn more about how the technology can benefit them, how they can work with the others in the community to, you know, to involve themselves in AI, to enhance what they're currently doing in AI, to do something new in AI, or to do something that I'm not even thinking about right now as I'm rattling all this stuff off that hopefully is a productive outcome of getting everybody together and talking. So definitely would encourage anybody that's interested to come. And again, it's free. It's open to the public. We start in the morning at Emerging Prairie with a startup brew takeover. Then we move over to NDSU's Berry Hall after that for the rest of the day.
And again, you can learn more at ndsu.edu/conferences/AI Connect. Dr. Jeremy Straub, he's been my guest here on Main Street. Thank you, Dr. Straub, for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me, Craig.
Coming up on Main Street, Dave Thompson and I will review this week's news from North Dakota, and especially the news from the North Dakota legislature. And there's a lot to cover there. Plus, Matt Olean reviews the movie I'm Still Here. It's in Spanish and subtitled, but it's a movie Matt really likes. That's ahead on Main Street. Stay with us.
Extra, extra, read all about it. Gather around, everybody.
It's Thursday. That means we need to tie up the news in our weekly review of the news with our veteran news director, Dave Thompson. Dave, how are you?
I'm doing well, Craig. How are you?
All right, as we did last week, Dave, let's have you complete this sentence. My biggest surprise in the North Dakota legislature this week was?
Not in the North Dakota legislature. My biggest surprise was Kirsten Baszler being nominated for a position in the federal Department of Education, given the fact that they want to dismantle the Department of Education, which I find kind of interesting.
That's right. President Trump has nominated North Dakota Superintendent of Schools Kirsten Baszler to be part of his administration. If she's confirmed by the Senate, she would be the next Assistant Secretary for Elementary and Secondary Education. Is there any discussion around Bismarck about why would one hop into this hot mess at the U.S. Department of Education at this time?
There are some people who are talking about it. So far, it's just kind of, you know, talking behind the scenes. But they do think it's a feather in North Dakota's cap that she is facing that appointment. You know, in order to close that department down, you have to have Congress do it. Congress established it. So Congress will have to close it down. And it remains to be seen what her role is going to be. I think it's going to be interesting. And, you know, got to say good for her for that.
Yeah, congratulations to her for sure. She'll have quite a hand now in the nation's K through 12 student success is, I think, what she's tagged to be responsible for. So yes, best wishes to her. Dave, in the House, the Ten Commandments bill failed to have Ten Commandments, a bill that would have required them to be in every public K through 12 classroom.
Yes, and also in the state-funded colleges would have to display them in the cafeterias. I found it very interesting because, you know, the arguments were very, very heated at points. So Representative Davis from Rolette had almost a tearful exchange when she said, you know, we Native Americans, we've been treated like second-class citizens. This is just continues it because we don't get to do our traditions. And you're establishing de facto a state religion by doing this. Very moving testimony. And there were other people who said, hey, the Ten Commandments are the foundation for some of the things that made the United States what it was, that talked about the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, et cetera, that Ten Commandments were one of the cornerstones.
Just reading the bill here, Dave, I misspoke just a moment ago. The bill would have required that the Ten Commandments be in cafeterias in K-12 schools, not in every classroom. So I apologize for that.
Very interesting about this bill is that in 2023, the North Dakota legislature passed a measure that says you could display the Ten Commandments in your classroom with other historical documents as long as you got the permission of the school board. This one says you don't need the permission of the school board, you just do it. So that's where there could be kind of local control could be at the fight too.
Dave, the House has rejected a bill to put abortion under murder and assault laws, and there were plenty of institutions and folks who spoke against this bill.
That is correct. There was a national effort to say they sent letters to the North Dakota legislature saying, don't do this. We don't want to criminalize the woman. But they went ahead and did it anyway. Now, the supporters say one of the real things behind the bill was try to be a deterrent so you don't get an abortion. And really what it was targeting was women who use abortion pills. So they were trying to say, you know, you use an abortion pill, you might be charged for murder. That would probably be a very tough thing to prove, according to attorneys I've talked to, but still the law would be on the books. So they were saying this could be a deterrent. It didn't pass, and got a battering of votes, but did not get the overall majority.
Enjoying our conversation with Dave Thompson. He's Prairie Public's news director. We review the news each and every week here on Prairie Public. And Dave has been working hard covering the North Dakota legislature. Dave, a bill that would have mandated that the Holocaust be taught in schools is now being considered by the House committee. And my surprise here is, isn't it already being taught in North Dakota schools?
And that is a very good question. The bill itself would actually prescribe a certain way of teaching the Holocaust that would, you know, focus on the anti-Semitism, you know, in the United States and other countries. What the School Boards Association testified to is said, okay, let's have DPI set standards saying you shall teach the Holocaust, and here are some of the standards you should use, but let the local school districts develop their own curriculum. So the real fight there is the curriculum. What are you going to use? Are you going to use this prescribed curriculum or your own?
Dave, taxes on tobacco and nicotine products could soon rise in the state. What's the latest with committee hearings there?
Well, the latest is that Representative Steiner from Dickinson has introduced a bill that would match our tobacco tax with South Dakota's, and it would add taxes on vaping and e-cigarettes, which they don't have separate taxes now, other than sales taxes. The effort is to try to dissuade young people from smoking by making the tobacco products more expensive or maybe too expensive to not fit in with their budgets. I honestly think it's probably going to have a rocky road because these things have had rocky roads. An earlier bill that Senator from Fargo introduced didn't go this far and it failed.
The bill to lower the cost of medical marijuana was rejected by the North Dakota House. Why was it rejected?
Because there is concern about raising the THC levels and having more marijuana product available. They're worried about kids getting into it. That's some of the arguments that I heard on the floor. But the sponsor of the bill, Representative Murphy from Grand Forks, saying it's cheaper if you buy it in larger quantities. So he was trying to allow it. He said this is an incremental step, but it did not get enough traction on the House floor. As you know, Craig, the medical marijuana situation has been an interesting journey for North Dakota because we had the measure that passed to allow it. Then the legislature, by 2/3 vote, undid the law and then came up with their own law that they wrote during a session, delayed the implementation of that. And the reason that the legislature did that is that because that initiated measure did not fit with North Dakota statutes. So they wanted to have something that fit with North Dakota statutes. And every time there's been a change, it is a matter of debate in the North Dakota legislature.
Dave, the North Dakota Senate has defeated a measure to end eminent domain for CO2 pipeline projects. This is a hot topic.
Very hot topic that, you know, the Summit Carbon Solutions pipeline has kind of fueled this. Summit says it has agreements from about 89% of the people in North Dakota along the route of the pipeline, which would sequester CO2 in a place in Oliver County. Well, there are opponents along the route who worry that because they haven't agreed to it, Summit Carbon will use its eminent domain facility and just build it. Well, the thing is, even with eminent domain, the people who are objecting to the pipeline and see the pipeline built will get some kind of payment from Summit. But there is another thing at play here, that there is some doubt about whether this is just more of the green energy push. And there some people are opposing it for that reason.
Dave, a free school meals bill has advanced in the North Dakota Legislative Committee part of the North Dakota legislature. And the debate is, where should this money come from to support $140 million to have free lunches for North Dakota students?
The interesting debate is, where does the money come from? Because the one proposal says that will come from the general fund or from the SIF fund. The other says it should come from the earnings on the legacy fund. That's one way and another to fund it. So there are two different funding mechanisms here. But so far, the legislature leans toward a general fund or what they call the SIF fund, which is Strategic Investments and Infrastructure Fund.
Dave, what should we really keep our eyes on next week in the North Dakota legislature? And I should point out, well, much of the state will have a day off on Monday. That's not true for you and the North Dakota legislature.
That is correct. We will be working Monday because they will be in session. There are a couple of sticky wickets left on the property tax relief bill because when it passed its first test in the House of Representatives, it was kicked back to House Appropriations, then it has to be kicked back to the House. Then we'll be probably in the Senate committees, maybe as soon as next week. That one's to watch, because the one change that they made, a substantial change from the original bill, is that they're these 30% or 3% caps are kind of not hard caps, but communities can get around the caps if they go to voters. And that is still kind of an evolving thing.
Interesting solution there. Dave Thompson, he's our news director here at Prairie Public, and we review the news each and every week here on Main Street. Dave, thanks for being with us again.
Thank you, Craig. Tell you a story
about a little fella. Dakota Medical Foundation is reminding listeners of Giving Hearts Day, a 24-hour event supporting charities in North Dakota and Northwest Minnesota, Thursday, February 13th. Since 2008, Giving Hearts Day has connected donors with charities to help fund their missions and raise over $195 million. Learn more at givingheartsday.org.
That's the fanfare we always hear that gives us a great clue if we didn't know already. Of course, it's Thursday. That means on Main Street, it's time to go to the movies with our great movie reviewer, Matt Olean. Matt, welcome back to Main Street.
Thanks, Greg.
The movie is I'm Still Here. Take your Kleenex to this one, maybe, Matt.
Yeah, this is a good one. Director Walter Salles, who's best known, I think, in this country for Central Station, which came out in 1998. He's made a remarkable film. I think this is one of my top five or six or seven of the year. And again, this is up for three Oscars, Best Actress, Best Picture, and Best International Film. So Fernanda Torres stars as Eunice Piava. And this is the true story of the Piava family who lived in Brazil in the 60s and 70s. And people in this country may not realize this, but a lot of South American countries had dictators in the 70s. And it was a tough time. Argentina has famously been discussed, but Brazil had a dictatorship as well from 1964 to 1985. So the husband in the film, Rubens Piava, he is like a former senator, and he's been in exile for a few years since the dictatorship came back. Then he comes back to the family in 1970, and they're living a pretty good life. But if you watch the trailer, and this is, by the way, playing at the Fargo Theater right now, I think that's the only place in the state it's playing, he disappears. And he suddenly disappears in 1970. Not going to tell you anything more. You have to go watch the movie. But this was common in Brazil in those days. People just disappeared if the dictatorship saw them as a threat. Rubens Piava, the husband in the film, is a former senator. He was in the Congress and is considered, you know, more left-wing. So he's dangerous to the dictatorship. So what happens from there? You'll have to go see the movie. But really, it's about it's really Eunice's story and her five children, four girls and a boy, and how they kind of persevere and how they kind of struggle with the husband and father's disappearance. What I think works in this film so well is Salles, the director, he doesn't overdo anything. It's not a preachy film. He just kind of he lays out the facts and allows the audience to feel how we're going to feel. There's a lot of jump forward in time. There's a lot of things to pay attention to. You know, there's torture, there's things like that going on, but it's really how the mother and the kids cope with this and what they do to kind of get through it. Eventually, the dictatorship does end in 1985, as people could look that up historically. But the real center of the film is Fernanda Torres, who gives a remarkable performance. She's up for Best Actress. I think she's got an outside chance, Craig, to win. Because I think the momentum for Carla Sofia Gascon in Emilia Perez has definitely cooled. So I think it's between Demi Moore, Mikey Madison, and Fernanda Torres for Best Actress. It's a really great performance. It's one of these, you know, true life performances of a woman who takes matters into her own hands to try to find her husband, to try to get answers, to try to get answers from the government. And as you can imagine, Craig, sometimes they're knocking their heads against the wall trying to get answers as to why the husband disappeared. Is he ever coming back? What's going on? So a really good historical film about a time that Americans might not be familiar with down in Brazil. I mean, we consider Brazil a democracy now, but for 21 years, it was not. So Really good film, amazing film. There's nothing fancy about it in terms of how it's shot or edited or anything like that. It's just a well-crafted historical film about this family. And it is based on the 2015 memoir of Marcello Rubens Piava, who is the only boy in the family, the only son, with the four sisters. He wrote a book about this whole situation that came out in 2015. So that's what it's really based on.
Matt, you've touched about a couple of things that I want to ask you about, but you haven't talked about subtitles in the film. How did that play with you?
Well, it's subtitled, so you're going to have to read it if you go to the film. That's the way it is. So there's English subtitles. So, you know, I don't mind reading subtitles. I do know some people don't like to go to subtitled movies, but that's how it's going to be.
You always wonder with a movie like this, Matt, that there is an artistic license, right, for any mm-hmm. movie that's created. But this is also a movie that I think wants to be historically accurate. Do they accomplish both?
Yeah, I think they do. It's based on the memoir of the son. I have not read it. You know, I wasn't even sure this was a true story when I went to it. I went in completely blind. And the friend I went with, we really enjoyed it. I went with two different friends to this one, and all three of us really loved it. I think it's best to go into these films without too much knowledge. So if you're going to go, I would say don't look up any of this on Wikipedia. Just go in and see what you think about it. But I do think because it's based on the son's memoir, it is really close to the facts. Of course, when you're making a movie, you know, some scenes may have artistic license in terms of how he remembers things. He was only 11 when his father disappeared in 1970, so he may have some fuzzy memories of things. I'm not sure. But basically, it's a true story and how, you know, what happens to the father. And you'll have to go to see to find out and if answers are found. And I will say, again, it's really Fernanda Torres's film. She's the mother. She's the wife. She tries to find out what happens, and it's really someone taking matters into their own hands when they have no other options.
Did you feel like you were in the 70s with the way the film was edited, the music behind it, the cinematography that you touched on just a moment ago?
Yeah, there's some definite references to the time. All the clothing and the hairstyles look like around 1970, how my parents used to dress at the time. There's a scene where the two of the sisters play a song by Jane Birkin and Serge Gainsbourg, Je T'aime, which is a very famous song at the time. There's references to the Beatles because one of the daughters goes off to school in London and she's like, I'm going to meet John Lennon and things like that. So there's a lot of references to the time and it's historically accurate.
What's coming up, Matt? What are we going to listen to from you next week?
Well, let me say one more thing about I'm Still Here. I do think it has a good chance to win the International Feature Oscar over Emilia Perez. Those are the two that are really in contention for that. As you may know, Craig, there's been a lot of backlash against Emilia Perez in the last few weeks based on some past comments made by the lead actress who's transgender. They're kind of derogatory comments about other people and things going on. So I think that has hurt Emilia Perez. The other thing I think is going to hurt the 13-time nominated film is I just run into a lot of people that didn't care for it. It's a very polarizing movie, and I don't think it's a film that people really want to go see terribly badly. But I think I'm Still Here is more of a film that, you know, audiences will want to see. So I think it's got a good chance to pull off the win when a month ago it seemed like it probably wouldn't beat Emilia Perez for international feature film. So next week we'll talk about The Substance with Demi Moore. I did not see this movie last summer when it came out. As you know, Craig, the horror genre is not my genre. It's not something I really seek out to go see for the most part. But it's a much-nominated movie. Demi Moore has a chance to win the Oscar, so I did see it. And we will talk about it next week.
As the New York Times said about that movie, gore and nudity galore in that movie. So
yes,
we'll look forward to your review about that. Matt, explain to us, the Oscar nominations now have been out for a little bit. Mm-hmm. When does voting end? Do people have to send in their votes right away, or do they get to sense the noise around different movies like you've talked about?
I'm not sure what the deadline is. The awards are March 2nd, so very soon we'll be doing my Oscar predictions, probably in 2 weeks, I guess we'll do that. They need to tabulate these things. I think usually about a week before the show, you have to have your picks emailed in or texted in or however they do this anymore. So going to be an interesting year. I can't get a real feel for who the favorite is for Best Picture. I do have a few you know, favorites for the other awards, though.
All right, let's go to our Oscar trivia part of the show, Matt. The director of this movie, Matt, as you let us know, was Walter Salles. He's received international recognition for his films. Which of his previous films were nominated for Best Adapted Screenplay at the Academy Awards?
Central Station in 1998.
And?
Foreign language film it was nominated for. I think it might have won that year.
The Motorcycle Diaries.
Oh, The Motorcycle Diaries. That's right. That's right. He did direct that.
In 2004. We've been to the movies with our great friend and our colleague here at Prairie Public, Matt Olien. Matt, thanks for joining us.
You bet.
Hear the past come to life on Dakota Datebook 5 times a day, Monday through Friday, on Prairie Public. We tell North Dakota's story one colorful character at a time. Dakota Datebook, your daily dose of North Dakota history on Prairie Public.
This is Dakota Datebook for February 13th. On this date, in 1885, Mrs. Dill awaited trial in the Richland County Jail. The Wahpeton paper reported that a search of the Dill farm had turned up the missing August Dill, buried in the cow stable under a pile of manure. Mrs. Dill, her sons, and a hired man were arrested and taken to Wahpeton. Mrs. Dill confessed, saying she alone was the murderer and had placed the body there without help. The case of Mrs. Dill made headlines across the region. She was found guilty and sentenced to life with hard labor at the territorial prison in Yankton. A St. Paul paper dubbed her the Dakota Territory murderess, though she posed no threat to the public. Isolated on the farm and speaking only German, Mrs. Dill relied on English interpreters for her court statements. Domestic abuse and self-defense were not presented as mitigating factors. Her husband had been missing since January 26th. Relatives grew suspicious and eventually searched the Dill farm. According to Mrs. Dill's testimony, August Dill had been in a foul mood over a debt owed to a machine agent. Wielding an iron poker, he began beating her, grabbing her hair, and smashing her head against the wall. She broke free, grabbed a gun from the hired man's coat, and shot August. She tried to revive him, but he was dead. She then dragged him to the barn and buried him. 10 days later, relatives arrived and discovered the body. Mrs. Dill was described as a small, frail woman, her expression reflecting great suffering. Petitions for her release were signed by influential figures in Wahpeton before and after the trial. The hired man, charged as an accomplice, died in the Wahpeton jail a few weeks later. Mrs. Dill's sons were convicted as accomplices, but received light sentences. One son died shortly after his release. In April of 1891, Governor John Burke pardoned Mrs. Dill. The petition for her release was signed by the court officers, the foreman of the convicting jury, and many citizens of Wahpeton familiar with the case. Today's Dakota Datebook was written by Lisa Erdrich. I'm Merrill Pepcorn.
Dakota Datebook is produced in cooperation with the State Historical Society of North Dakota, with funding from Humanities North Dakota.
Arts programming on Prairie Public is supported in part by the North Dakota Council on the Arts, a state agency developing, promoting, and supporting the arts in North Dakota.
Years ago, a power failure left millions of people in Texas freezing in their homes for days. What we've learned since then on the next morning edition from NPR News.
Starting at 4 a.m. Central, right here on Prairie Public.
And that's a wrap for this Giving Hearts Day edition of Main Street here on Prairie Public. Thank you so much for joining us. We are deeply grateful. Remember that your support on Giving Hearts Day helps power the tower here at Prairie Public, and it keeps Prairie Public's trusted news, arts, and educational programming strong for communities across our state and the Prairie region. And with every donation matched dollar for dollar, your impact goes even farther. Give today on Giving Hearts Day at prairiepublic.org. Tomorrow in this time slot at 3 p.m., it's The Middle with host Jeremy Hobson. His topic this week, what is the value of cryptocurrency to society? And at 7 p.m. on Friday, it's Science Friday with Ira Flatow. Monday, we'll have special programming at 3 p.m. and 7 p.m. Central, and Main Street will be back with you on Tuesday. From all of us here at Prairie Public, have a wonderful President's Day weekend, and we'll see you right back here on Tuesday on Main Street.